I know we don't do a lot in terms of continuity on this show, but I wanted to sort of end the serial trilogy, if you will, with some interesting events that happened yesterday.
Okay, okay. Let me see if I can predict which sort of storyline we're following. Is it has something to do with the egg sandwich?
Well, no, it's about the cereal.
Oh, the cereal. I thought,
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a cereal, right? Technically?
It is. Do you want to bring people up to speed with where we are so far?
Russ had a lot of cereal.
Russ had 18 boxes of Frosted Mini Wheats, and he got hit by a truck, and they went flying everywhere, and it was hysterical.
Yeah.
I remember that.
That brings us up to speed. So last, I would say month or so, I've been having some difficulty swallowing, which was weird. And so I went to an...
It's because you're trying to eat too many Frosted Mini Wheats. You got too many of them in there at once.
You are surprisingly not that far off base. I went ENT, an ear, nose, and throat doctor yesterday. They were very curious as to why I felt that way. And apparently the only way to look into it is by sending a camera down there to check things out.
Yeah.
But apparently the mouth is not where you send that camera. It goes right up the old schnoz.
Oh, no.
Oh, beans.
Yeah. So they sent a camera up my nose. And he's like, yeah, you probably have acid reflux. Here's some medication. And just like be mindful of what you're eating. And then I did a bunch of research. So now in hindsight, it turns out that maybe having a bowl of cereal every night before I went to bed for the last 6 months, not the best idea.
I love that. I used to do that all the time. I love that. That's such a pleasant way to relax. What problems did it cause you, Russ?
Horrible acid reflux.
Yeah, follow the plot, juice.
But your body, I don't think your body cares to digest that for you.
I mean, it was causing a lot of problems. I guess all of that cereal, I mean, I had to power through. What was the alternative? Not eat the cereal?
Not eating the frosted mini wheats.
You have all, are you talking in the scopes of bowls or boxes? Like you had to power through because you had all these boxes of frosted mini wheats?
Yeah, I have boxes. Boxes and boxes.
You could just not eat the or give them to somebody or distribute them amongst your friends.
What, he's gonna curse somebody else with this terrible, debilitating disorder?
And we're also in the heart of pandemic country. You think I'm just gonna share cereal? That doesn't seem smart.
Yeah, who's gonna be like, how'd you get COVID? I went over to my broken friend Russ's house to take all his cereal from him, and I got the COVID that way.
I had to get a nose camera procedure done during this wonderful quarantine as well, Russ. And before I could get it done, I had to get a COVID test. Mm. And it was a drive-through thing. So like a woman in full like protective gear came to my window, rolled down my window, and like jammed this thing up my nose. And she pulled it out and she looked at me and she said, I got a little boogie on there. And I wanted to be like, I'm 33. You can't talk to me like that. I'm a grown adult man.
It's a big boogie. It's a man's boogie.
This is probably our grossest intro yet.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
Red 3, Griffin McElroy, reporting in for the best game of the week and information.
My name is Russ Rushing, and I know the best stars of the week.
Gwyneth Paltrow is one of them.
Welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. This is a game of the year show that goes all year long. It's like a book club for video games. We are so happy to be back with you in this sort of, the games are back, folks. We had a little bit of a dry spot, but boy, howdy, the games are here and they are playable.
Now, the four of us were doing a strafing run on a Star Destroyer. Chris Plant's A-Wing got blown right out of the sky. So he got blown up. So that's why he's not here.
A lot of Chris Plants died to bring us this episode of podcast.
Well, he's in that tube, that like blue tube that Luke Skywalker goes into to like heal up. So he'll probably be back in the near future. But for this episode, he's in the tube.
What are we talking about this week, Russ? Why, it's Star Wars Squadrons. What's that?
Star Wars Squadrons is a space flight sim from the folks at EA Motive. It basically comes in the vein of old school flight sims like X-Wing and TIE Fighter. If you've never played a space flight sim before, you fly through space and shoot bad guys and sometimes good guys in this case. This game is sort of a throwback to that era and has caused a lot of people to go out and buy flight sticks for the first time in 30 years. So.
Big year for flight sticks.
It is. Yeah. It is a big year.
So we'll be back to talk about this very soon. But until then, stay tuned. We promise that this episode won't make you yawn.
I mean, it's no Star Wars Episode 1 Battle for Naboo for the Nintendo 64. Let's
no
start off by
Star
saying
Wars
that.
Episode 1 Podcast Racer.
Yes, that too. So the three of
Podcast
us.
Podcast Racer was not the name of that.
It
was Episode 1 Racer, not Podcast Racer. That was a good game, actually. That game was sick as hell.
Yeah.
It actually isn't one as good as that.
There was a church camp that I used to go to that had a Pod Racer arcade machine, like in the cafeteria. And while I maybe didn't get a lot out of some of the programming at this event, the pod racing was pretty tight.
Do you think that's like a donation thing? Like how much of their donations went to just paying for the pod racing stand-up arcade?
I mean, you had to pay money to go to church camp, Russ. I know that this is probably an alien concept, but you did have to, there was an entry fee.
Okay, so what percentage of your entry fee went to paying for the
It was not
racing?
A very well-maintained arcade machine, so I'm going to guess not very okay. much. We've immediately gotten off track.
This is kind of an interesting, it's not technically a franchise, right? But there's very clearly a lineage here of Star Wars flight games.
Yeah.
Do either of you have sort of experience going in with...
Yes.
With this subgenre?
Yeah, I don't have the years in front of me, but I can give you ballpark years.
I mean, it was a weirdly condensed, it was like late 90s, early aughts. Like there was like a 5-year window there where there were Star Wars flight games coming out every single, like two a year. Like
it
a
was
wild.
So it was in the heart of the 90s and it started with X-Wing, which was effectively, you know, a traditional flight sim with like a narrative about how you're an X-Wing pilot. And you go and fight the Empire and blah, 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 blah. You know, pretty standard stuff. That was followed up with TIE Fighter, where same idea, but in this case, obviously, you're fighting for the Empire. I think in both cases, actually, it was like, narratively, they were very strong, interesting games. And the fact that they came out when they did meant you had like 3D games before 3D games were really a thing, or at least not super popular, because they didn't have environments, right? It was just in space. So you could really do a lot if you were just having these like little models flying around the screen. So after those two, there was X-Wing versus TIE Fighter and X-Wing Alliance. And I think that was basically the end of this like run. It was like those four games. And they all basically followed the same model. And I think this game is very much comes from that lineage.
Well, there was
also the Rogue Squadron trilogy.
Which was its own sort of, it was its own sort of thing, right? Like X-Wing, it's so funny because I feel like you do, if you look back at both of those, like, sub franchises, the Rogue Squadron and the X-Wing TIE Fighter thing, like X-Wing TIE Fighter was more simmy while Rogue Squadron was a bit more arcadey. And I think Star Wars Squadrons like actually splits the difference between the two of them, like really very well. But I didn't have a lot of experience with those, and I will admit to like not this is not my like particular cup of tea. But this is also one of those cases where I recognize that this is a quality title from those game wizards at Electronic Arts Entertainment.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Here's what I will say: I do not think any sort of awareness of those previous games is necessary.
No,
it is very light in terms of hardcore. I'm sure you could get more hardcore with it. There are definitely options for that. I would say that though it's pretty basic. I mean, in terms of what you have the flexibility to do, the only sort of real nuance is sort of diverting power between three systems, which is your shields, your blasters, and speed/maneuverability. where you can just hit a button on the D-pad and you sort of put more energy into those systems that make you faster or make your guns shoot better or make your shields better. You can also change the direction of your shields sort of on the fly. So if you've got bad people behind you, you can take them out that way. I will say this wasn't really clicking for me at first because it's kind of a slow starter, I would say. Mm-hmm. The sort of dogfights at the beginning are very simplistic. There's a lot of talking. There's a lot of like, follow me to this place over here. But once you get, and there also wasn't that much need to sort of explore these more advanced systems. But I will say, like, as you get further into the campaign and as you these battles start to take on a bigger scale, you really do need to lean into those systems, and it feels good. Like, it feels good to need to catch somebody, and you switch full power to speed to catch them, and then you switch to your, you know, guns to blast them, and like zipping around through the mission. Where it really got me was I had to like defend a bunch of Y-wings and chase down some TIE fighters that were trying to blow them up. And I was like slipping in between huge chunks of debris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it felt cool. Like it felt like really, really neat and grounded in a way that like space combat games aren't typically.
Yeah. It didn't really click until I got into the multiplayer, which I am absolutely dog shit at, but I've never had so much fun playing something that I am so terrible at. My KD Raish is an absolute joke in these matches. But all that stuff, like Justin said, it's really your piloting comes down to how you push power to various systems. Stuff like your aim and which like things you have slotted into your loadout, things like repair droids or missiles or I think there's like a turret type thing. You can like switch between those at will. And then there's also your throttle, which you can like burst to full if you want to catch up with somebody, or you can drop down to zero if you want extra maneuverability. Mm-hmm. So like it's very arcadey in that sense that like it seems like you have a very limited list of things that you can do, but when you are in a match with four other pilots against five enemy pilots all using these same systems in a, you know, fully 3D space, like the complexity of those systems and the skill ceiling of those systems becomes immediately apparent when you get like fully shit on. But it does make those instances where you utilize the systems to their like intended zenith like so good. And the knowing that you have like outflanked an actual human being in a dogfight is for me like way more. The campaign did very little for me. I think it has great production values and there's like great voice acting, and like you said, like there's really cool set pieces, but for me the multiplayer is like absolutely where it's at.
Yeah, I was able to do a match with like four other people from work. And so we were all on comms and like coordinating and stuff like that. And it really is pretty incredible on that front. It's also, I think, a lot more approachable than like most normal flight sim multiplayer games, to the point where like you can be kind of terrible and still contribute, which makes a big difference. I'd agree with a lot of that stuff. Griffin earlier said that it kind of splits the difference. I think this between arcadey and sim, I think this is about as simmy as the other games got, to be honest. Like, you really are, that like power shifting and shifting shields is constant and requires like a lot of spinning plates. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's like a pick up and play kind of thing, unless you were to, you know, dial down the difficulty all the way to the bottom and you kind of don't need to worry about any of that stuff.
I may just still have the taste of Microsoft Flight Simulator in my mouth. Like, I think I just played this and recognized, like, they could go a lot wilder with this. There's no flap adjustment on your A-wing.
Not having to deal with gravity helps a lot.
Yeah.
There's some interesting stuff they're doing with storytelling that I feel like could be executed a little better, but they give you the interesting option to, like, talk to your crewmates in between missions. Like you're sort of, it's not like a fully realized, like walking around free roam type world, but mm-hmm. you're in the hangar and you can look around at your different compatriots and they have different things to say. And they have some really good looking like facial animations and it's well rendered and well performed and well written, I would say.
Yeah.
But it's a cool thought because it really gives a little bit more, like it takes the, rather than just a dot on your reticle, during a fight, it's like they're more fully realized characters. I wish that they had found a way to integrate it more into the like gameplay aspects because it really feels very separate.
Sure.
And a lot, and it's very much like, do you want to stop playing for a while to talk to people or would you rather play some more of the game? I wish there was a way where it could be like hand in hand a little bit more. The briefings, I will say, are really cool.
Yeah.
They're so cool. And it's one of the very few, like, ever briefings in a game like this where I'm like, okay, now this is where we're going to go. And you can see it because it's 3D and they're walking you through it and you can go step by step and flip back and forth between the plans. Like, it really does actually prepare you better for the mission because you know these ships, you know what they look like.
Right.
So if they're saying, like, this is the weak spot on this thing, this is what you need to target, you can actually find it while you're playing. Now, of course, they will auto-target it for you on the HUD or whatever, but, like, you can, the briefings were like actually did prepare you for what was going to happen, which I thought was a really cool touch.
Who is making these PowerPoint presentations?
I don't know. Probably Mon Mothma.
Han Solo
is probably.
You think they have that sort of time on their hands?
Maybe
dive in.
I think that it simulates for me. Obviously, I think we're all talking about it, right? Like we don't have necessarily an affinity for the old X-Wing TIE Fighter games, but there is so much just like endemic Star Wars knowledge that going into this game, like when you're playing as the Rebel Alliance, you can play as you actually have to play as both factions, the Rebel Alliance and the Empire, throughout this campaign, and each one has four ships that you can pilot, which some missions let you play as specific ones and give you a certain level of customization. But when you're in multiplayer, you basically get to pick whatever you want and outfit it however you want. And, you know, when you're playing for the Empire, it's different TIE. There's like a TIE interceptor and a TIE fighter and all those. But when you're playing as the Rebels, it's a Y-Wing, an A-Wing, an X-Wing, and I forget what the other one's
B-wing,
called.
B-Wing, I think? U-Wing?
I don't know. It's but like
it's Apache QA.
It's but like when
Buffalo
I
Wing?
I think it's a Buffalo Wing. When you see those options though, like when I saw that I could fly an A-Wing, that was always like my favorite Star Wars ship and I got so stoked. When you do the briefings and you're standing around the holo table and you're like seeing where like the briefings took place in Star Wars, you know, every Star Wars movie, like this simulates, I feel like we've had so many games that simulates like being a Jedi and what the Jedi experience is like to varying degrees of success. And what's great about this game, and I'm sure other, you know, games in the TIE Fighter X-Wing like series, is that it simulates a different part of the Star Wars universe, which I always like really, really, really dig because there's a lot more cool shit in the universe than just like, you know, lightsabers and stuff.
I want to talk about two other quick things. First one is I did have some bugs while I was playing, two of which, like both of which like stopped my progress while I was playing. The first was while I was supposed to be my leader, Gunny, our leader of the unit, Gunny was like, follow me. And I followed Gunny, and then she eventually started doing donuts around me. So I followed her while she was circling me over and over and over again. And then another ship from our fleet just came out of nowhere and like drilled her and sent her spinning. And then she zipped back to me and we just circled each other until I eventually rebooted my computer. And that seemed to fix it. The other one was I was learning how to drift.
Oh yeah.
And it froze. When I went right at the exact moment where it was telling me how to do the maneuver, and this happened repeatedly, and it was so cruel to let me, they know how I feel about drifting, to let me get that close to drifting and then to yank it away from me. I literally could not progress past that point. Ugh. Like I could not, it was miserable.
Brutal.
So something to be considered about. Russ, I would love for you and I to address the VR component.
You know,
of this
I thought.
Game. Griff, did you try it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's sick.
Okay. All right,
I
good.
Thought my weak little tummy had stopped being the focus of this episode, but you know what is going to come back with a vengeance right here. VR in this game is incredibly, incredibly cool. That first 30 seconds of you being in the cockpit and you're flying around and you look at your buddies and they're on your wing and it's amazing.
It actually heightens play. I mean, heightens the experience. I mean, beyond just like being immersive and cool as hell, it's integrated in a really smart way where like, I don't know how you did it, but like, I just kept playing with the controller.
Yeah.
And I just was strapped into my VR headset sitting in front of my computer so I could look all around the ship. And it really does give you better situational awareness, mm-hmm. better sense of speed, I think, of how fast you're moving through the world. All that stuff, like, very, very cool.
And it was designed for, sorry, you mentioned like being in the hangar and like talking to people. You can't move. It's just like a still, like, you can't move your character. You just look around the hangar, and if you see an NPC, you can turn and look at them and click a button, and then you'll talk to them. That was so clearly designed for VR. Like,
yeah.
The game was designed for VR from the ground up, it seems like.
For sure. And also just like the nature of like tracking enemies, like it's actually a massive advantage in multiplayer because you can track a target above you or below you where ordinarily you couldn't.
Right.
Now, with all that said, the first 30 seconds in VR for me was very, very cool. About 10 minutes in is where things started to go a little awry. I can't play more than 10 minutes of VR in this game because it is far too much for my delicate tummy to withstand. I think the turning point, if you will, was the like changing the yaw when you like spin your ship to do like a barrel roll was like, nope, big nope, not happening. And I literally had to stop, and I've tried it one other time, and again, 10 minutes in, it was just not for me. So it definitely is for VR experts only.
I have a pretty strong stomach when it comes to that stuff. After about 45 minutes of it, I was like,
that's pretty good. 45 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, it was good. I will say I wouldn't necessarily play the whole game like this.
No.
It's like, it's very cool to see though. And like fun and short, if you're just going to do it in short bursts, like great. I just want to play a bunch of it, you know, before this episode, but like a very cool way to enjoy it.
But I said it was designed from the ground up for VR. It's far from necessary because I never get nauseous or have any sort of problems like that with VR. But like eventually I just started playing it on my TV because the headset is uncomfortable. Like I don't like having that stress. It's a comfort thing and not like a nausea thing. And it's totally fine to play it without.
Someone did make an interesting point on Twitter saying that the Empire is like at a massive disadvantage because if you're in a TIE fighter, you can't look up, which is a pretty fair point.
There's a weird asymmetry there. So we mentioned shields. Empire ships don't have shields. They just have stronger hulls. So there is like a pretty big like conceptual difference. The ships really do feel very, very different, both between the different factions and between the different ships. If you're flying an X-wing, you know, you're in a pretty standard fighter jet. But if you're in an A-wing, you know, you can take maybe two hits before you go down, but you are like a mosquito, like zipping around the battlefield. I do wish there was a little bit more meat to the like progression system of the game. Like it is very focused in what it is doing to the game's benefit. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's like a ranking system, but there's a leveling system where you can unlock these points that you can spend to buy different loadout additions, like I said, like different lasers. There's like a burst laser that you can that you have to be a little bit more accurate with, or there's a, you know, different sort of torpedo options or different like utility slot options, but there's not like a ton of those. Like it's not like Call of Duty where like you're unlocking all these different weapons and then you're unlocking different attachments and then you're, you know, tweaking here and there.
And you don't necessarily have a great sense going into a mission what would be the best loadout for any given scenario. I mean, it's much more a sense of taste. I will say to that point, one of the things you can have in your loadout is a sort of a missile interceptor. If you're getting hit by a missile, it's basically like kind of a flare that will distract a missile. But the main way that you avoid missiles in this game, and I wish every game did this, where if you see you're getting targeted by a missile, you just drive all crazy.
Yeah, that's
and then you'll lose it. And that's great. What? That's fantastic.
Or in multiplayer, I think all the maps except for one, I forget the one. There's one multiplayer map that has nothing. It's just like you're flying over like Yavin or something like that. And it's just open space. And that map sucks because the best shit is like when somebody's targeting you with a missile and you get the little prompt, like you are being targeted by a missile. And then you just sort of like zoom between two big broken pieces of Star Destroyer. And it like the missile bounces off of it and explodes. There are so many cool. Juice was talking about like you not knowing which loadout to bring into which mission. That is completely ameliorated in multiplayer, where you mm-hmm. figure out very quickly like what shit you like, and then you just get good with it. Yeah. And it is very satisfying. I have not played nearly enough multiplayer. I like that is the thing of the game that has hooked me in a way that I did not necessarily expect. And I would be really curious to play it with other people on comms, like actually. You know, working together, because there's 5-on-5 dogfight, and then there's like a bigger, I think 10-on-10 objective based mode.
Ship
that like
yeah, it's
just
like
feels impossible without some sort of like communication. But mm-hmm. yeah, also impressive they made the like, and this is a very I don't know trite point, but like they made a Star Wars game with like about a bunch of bullshit in it. And that is, I feel like, maybe we've set the bar a little bit too low, that I feel like that is an accomplishment in and of itself. But this
I
is kind of
know
really...
what's the bullshit that you're talking about?
I mean, there's no, on the service level, like, there's no microtransactions. Sure. And I feel like that is still a wild accomplishment for EA. But there's also, like, okay, there's not a ton of things to unlock in the progression. But, like, there's also not a ton of, like, unnecessary, fluffy, like... What extra 0.05% by using yeah. this Star Wars card that has, you know, Greedo on it. Like that shit is like so prevalent in so many games. And this game is not like about that. Like you can get the loadout you want pretty easily. And then it's just you getting in fun dogfights, which is it doesn't have as long a tail because it is not designed to have as long a tail. But and that's. Great, because not every game has to have collectible card game shit in it.
Let's take a break, and we'll come back and talk about more related and unrelated stuff. I wasn't kidding about the games. They are here. They are prevalent. They are fun. I'll just say it. I like video games.
Wow.
I just finished Ori and the Will of the Wisps.
What'd you think?
On the Switch.
Can I take a little trip back in time? Because I remember when you guys, and I want to say it was when Elise guested, but I feel like you guys were talking about Ori 2 and you were kind of dunking on it, saying like, it's boring, or I don't care about this owl that's a little cute little owl. And I hadn't played it at the time, so I didn't fight back. But I've now since played it, and holy shit, what a cold heart you must have had at that time.
I don't remember what I said. I say a lot of fucking things. The truth of the matter is I played maybe 5 minutes of it on PC and it was just not the right platform for it.
No.
Switch, however, is the perfect platform for it. Aside from like some glitchy hitchiness from time to time, I shouldn't say glitchy hitchiness. It runs smooth. I had some crashes.
Yeah.
But like it runs very well when you play it. And man, it's just like, very clear Metroidvania style action. They've done away with a lot of the more esoteric elements like creating your own safe points
and
things like that. It's very organic how that stuff happens, and it just feels great. It feels like fighting a bunch of stuff feels great. Getting around the world is like so fun because you have 6 or 7 different locomotive abilities you can chain together. It feels like there are so many different options for that stuff where like you start to feel like you are exploiting it.
Yes.
Because there's so much
in
there.
There are so many skips that you can do. Like if you get an ability that lets you basically launch off an enemy. Like if an enemy gets too close, you hold in this button, it goes into slow motion time, and then you can aim where you go and where the enemy launches to. You can also do that off projectiles. So there's so many instances where there's like, oh, you're not supposed to be able to get to that area until you get the double jump or whatever. But you can do it. If you like lure an enemy there, which is not hard, and then launch off of them, like you're there. It feels so like intoxicating to feel like you're cheating the system.
It also has a very cool way of making actual like main critical path stuff have to chain a bunch of weird abilities together in a way that doesn't make sense. Like, it really does give you that mode of like, certainly you don't want me to. Oh, you do. Okay. You do want me to reflect this missile down into a portal, follow the missile into the portal, then jump on the missile and redirect it down a different portal so I can blow the gate up. Like, you really, okay. So that's the actual thing you want me to do. So when you figure that out and when you actually execute on it, it feels great. Yeah,
it is
fantastic.
I actually got some like kind of Breath of the Wild vibes from it in terms of the structure, because they basically give you your core abilities relatively early on. You know, you get your double jump, you get your launch ability, etc. And a lot of the, like, you know, latter half of the game, you're kind of like free running with those abilities and having to explore deeper in the world. You do get more abilities on top of that, but generally speaking, you have the bulk of your abilities and you have to use those in like really creative ways to solve puzzles. And I found that to be, in contrast to Ori 1, which is also a game I loved, but that was a game that was very directed. It was very like, you go here next kind of thing. Whereas this, I really feel like I have a lot more freedom in terms of where I go.
It's also, it's just more fun. Like, Ori 1 was a great game, but it was also like it was a more contemplative, innovative sort of Metroidvania. This one is a more straight down the plate, but like, the flow of this game is unbelievable. I was absolutely obsessed with this game for the period of time when I was playing it on Switch, and I think it's a sleeper, like, game of the year contender. Absolutely. I think everybody should play it.
Yeah.
Immensely playable.
Playable. I recently talked about it for like a second. I actually talked about how I wanted to play it last episode. And then I downloaded it that night and I think finished it over a like breathless 3-day period was Paradise Killer, which Chris Plan, I know, is very enthusiastic about. It's a shame that he's not here. If I can sell Paradise Killer in 2 minutes, it is a vaporwave detective story in the vein of Danganronpa and Phoenix Wright, where you are on this island that is an artificial island created by basically a cult who kidnaps human beings and puts them in this like psychic paradise island to generate psychic energy to revive dead space gods. In this artificial island, all of the leaders of it are murdered in this one heinous act. And you play as Lady Love Dies, who is a detective who has been exiled from the island after sort of opening the gateway to this horrible demon event. And you are brought back into the fold and you have to like figure out what happened by going around and finding clues and piecing together all of these things and talking to all these really awesome NPCs. And it is
with names like
Lydia,
Dr. Doom Jazz,
Lydia Daybreak,
Carmelina Silence, The Witness to the End,
Crimson Acid. They are all super, super memorable. And there's, unlike a Phoenix Wright game and unlike Danganronpa, which has like a series of murders that you have to solve, there's just one. There's like one case that you have to solve. So you go around this huge open world finding clues and trying to find this very, very, very intricate web between people and like breaking alibis. But it's not like the game is, nothing is force fed to you. It's not like, oh, if you find the knife, then you can start the trial. There's just one trial. You can start it whenever you want. And then you have to figure out your own sort of justice. And after I beat it, I went online and found out like other people had found other, like had convicted other people, had other things. It is way more open-ended than any of those games. But the big thing is the aesthetic and story of the game. Like, it deals with all of these people like Dr. Doom Jazz and Crimson Acid, who's like a pop idol whose head was replaced with a deer's head. Like, it has all this wild shit, but it contextualizes it through like, yeah, we're immortal. We've been alive for millions and millions of years. So
we made it insane.
It's wild. Weird. Like, everything is fucking weird now. We worship these horrifying astral gods. So like, yeah, everybody on this island fucks. Like, yeah.
But the practicality of the mystery is very mundane, which is interesting as an interesting counterpoint to like, Yeah, anyway, we're all immortal sky gods, and we get high off the souls of chaos or whatever, and the door was locked between 9 and 9.03 p.m., so I don't know. You tell me. I will say this, that it was a slow burn for me to get into it. As cool as the aesthetics are, at first it just seems like a bunch of nonsense, like because everything is so... they throw so much at you at once that you really have to start like, and getting around the island is kind of arduous. But you have to, once you start meeting characters and fix them in your mind, then I think a lot of the pieces start to really come together and congeal. It's a very cool thing.
Like Obra Dinn, also, you have a really good method of tracking all of your clues and things. You have a computer called Starlight that whenever you find something, it will file it into the different sort of cases. There's like 8 sort of sub mysteries within this murder that you're trying to like piece together, but it will also file it under the there's only like 10 characters in the game, and it will file clues under them as well. So like if you talk to Dr. Doom Jazz and he gives you an alibi breaker for Lydia Daybreak, then you see that under her file. So it like categorizes everything really, really neatly. And you have a list of leads too. So it's like, hey, I heard that Lydia and Sam were hanging out by the beach a lot. I should go check that out. And you know to go there and look for clues so that you feel like when you go to trial, like you feel ready. I've never played a game quite like it. It is really, really,
it's
really
very
cool.
Neat. I would also reference Deadly Premonition.
Deadly Premonition, yeah.
Like in that sort of aesthetic vein, if you like that, you might like this.
It is on PC, but it is also on Switch. That is where I played it, and it runs just fine on Switch.
Quick plug. I want to do one more. For me, The Solitaire Conspiracy, which is the new joint by Bithell.
Oh, yeah.
As Mike Bithell has always called it, a Bithell joint, as he always says. This is the creator of John Wick Hex, Quarantine Circular, Subsurface Circular, those sort of like, and he does shorts, which is cool. But this new one is called Solitaire Conspiracy, and here's what's up. It is an FMV Sega CD ass game, which feels like a modernized one of those, where you have a FMV direct address sort of like partner who is like, hey, you're the only one who can help me. It's very Double Switch, very Night Trap. Like, hey, you're the only one who can help me. I've woken you up. I need you to shut down this thing to reconnect my power. It's Greg. It's Game Over Greggy. Greg Miller is your like partner and guide who's talking to you, which I adore Greg. So that's very, very fun. And the main way that you play and interact with the game, the only way, is by playing solitaire. And the type of solitaire that they have is each suit of cards represents, which cards is an acronym, by the way, and it addresses how you're supposed to give orders to these crews. Each suit of cards is a different crew, and the face cards of each of these crews have different powers. So there's one crew that is like an exfiltration kind of Fast and Furious style thing, where if you play one of their face cards on a stack, it will find the next card that you need to play in your solitaire game and zip them out and extract them in. There's one that like has an ability called Nepotism, where they reorder the cards in a stack when you play them to highest to lowest to make it easier for you to. And each of the different gangs or crews have these different abilities, and when you go, and there's always like 2 paragraphs of story flavor text as to like what this mission is. And it's like, we're starting an underground fighting league, and you're going to cover this one gang, and these other Humanism Plus is going to be selling some of these nanomachines. And it's like all this description of what the quest is. And it's like, then you play solitaire every single time. It does not matter. It's so funny. And I don't know. It's just very neat. At first, the solitaire is like bone easy. Like, absolutely. Like,
bone,
I don't even know why you need these powers.
You say.
Bone easy is a new one I came up with just now.
Like it.
At first, it's incredibly easy. And then all of a sudden, you're dealing with 4 different suits. And you can't get to the card. You see where all the cards are, so you know what you need to get to. But it's a lot of like moving them around in as few moves as possible, and like really puzzle game-alizes Solitaire. it's a short. It's $10. It's on Steam and Epic.
He makes great games. So
he makes great games. You'll love this game. It's great. It's great. Well written. And props to Greg Miller, the next Nolan North, Troy Baker.
I just wanted to say I recently discovered Steam Link on my phone, and it works so fucking good. I played a lot of No Man's Sky on it. Just plug it into DualShock 4 controller and just going to town. But the game I've been really getting into is Monster Train. Justin, it's a good one. Thank you for...
Thank
you. Yeah.
Fuck. It's, really?
It's so good. It's real good.
I promise I'll play it. I know we've talked a lot about it.
You can play it
at
Steam Link on your phone. I think it's a really great fit for iOS, and I'd be surprised if it doesn't come there natively, but like being... It's
the best!
You can play it really easy on your phone with Steam Link, and I'm all about it. There's so much depth there. There's so much, like, I thought it was not going to be anything more than Griftlands and Slay the Spire have already kind of given me, but there are.
And what a delight that would have been if it was only that, because those are two other fucking
great games.
Hallmark,
yeah.
Excellent games.
It's really cool, and it has enough to kind of set it apart from those, and it has its own niche, and it's one of those like games that I played a lot, and then I would kind of have dream strategies at night, like, oh well, if I could upgrade that to 6 pips, then I could put 2 of the hollows together. It is really good.
Oh, to be a fly on the wall of Griffin's dreams.
Oh man, it's fucked up. I did so much terraforming in Animal Crossing. I've decided to destroy my whole island, and then like last night I was dreaming about making curved edges on cliff sides and stuff. It's yeah, my brain is a tangled web.
Should we dive into reader mail?
Yes.
Yes,
okay,
please.
Before we do that, I wanted to reach out to our loyal, dedicated listeners. And I know we normally say this at the end of the show, but I'm going to do this right in the middle. Do us a huge favor and share the show with people. I know it doesn't seem like it makes an impact. We want this show to keep going and thriving and doing great, and it has been doing great, but we obviously always have room to grow and find new folks to enjoy the show. So please take a second if you can. The link is besties.fan. That's all you need to type into Twitter, and that'll send people to the show. But please.
Yeah, that'd be real cool of you.
That would be real cool. Okay, so we're going to get to reader mail from J. Jasper. 1, 2, 3. The only real criticism I've heard of the game, this is Star Wars Squadrons, is that you have to play as the bad guys attacking civilians. I finished the campaign and found that didn't affect me. Did you find yourself wrestling with that? Does being Star Wars make a difference? Am I a monster?
I think, is there, I'm going to ask a question. I'm kind of on pins and needles here because I could be really, outing myself as a monster, but like, I have seen Alderaan explode so many times.
Yeah.
That I don't really... And I understand. I mean, we're talking about, like, what? Terracide? I forget what it's called when you blow up an entire planet and everybody on it is killed. It's so bad. I feel like if you really tried to internalize that, nobody could make it through A New Hope. Like, people... Yeah. Were there people in theaters seeing A New Hope and then... The Death Star blows up Alderaan, and people are like, "What the fuck? There were you just killed billions of people!"
Weeping
like,
in the seats.
I think you got it's so cartoonishly awful that I don't think you can even come close to internalizing it. So that you extrapolate that by like you just don't care about it. A ship gets Biggs and Wedge get blown out of the sky, and you're like, "Oh well, okay, yeah." Yeah.
If you look at like all of the Star Wars canon, Alderaan is that planet that got blown up by Darth Vader. That's like you had to be watching that thing like, man, no one's gonna remember we had killer chili dogs on Alderaan. It's just like they're only gonna remember that we got blown up.
I got asked like, hey, do you want to pitch a Star Wars like young adult like comic series after I did the A Certain Point of View thing, and they're like, you can come up with whatever pitch you want. I was like, oh hell yeah, what if I do a book about like a kid who was like off world when Alderaan got blown up, and like what does it look like to like try and preserve the culture of your exploded planet and like preserve the history of it? And I pitched that to Lucas, to not LucasArts, whatever, like, you know, publishing house handles those books. And the person who offered me was like, you know what? We're going to pass on this. It's pretty. That would be pretty heinous, bud. That would be a little too dark for our 7 to 10 year olds that we want to read this book.
Yeah. Darth Vader blew up a planet. Like, are we just going to pretend like it didn't happen?
Yeah.
Just because, like, Porky Pig dressed like Darth Vader one time, it doesn't mean that he didn't blow up a planet. Yeah. Dude sucks.
I turned good at the...
I saw him as a little boy. He said wizard.
Yeah, he blew up a planet.
He blew up a whole fucking planet.
But he killed the old wrinkly lightning man.
Yeah, but he blew up a whole planet.
It's actually wild that you get to see his ghost, like, chilling and watching his family. He should be burning in hell.
Space hell.
He should be burning in space hell.
Yeah.
Okay, we have one last question. This is from Games and Culture. Which Star Wars ship would you be happiest to swallow?
Griffin?
No, this isn't my thing anymore, man. I can't. You, how dare you put that poison back on my plate?
I mean, let's rule some out. It ain't an X-Wing.
It ain't an X-Wing.
100%, yeah, right? Sure. Like, 100%. Don't want to eat an X-Wing.
For sure.
I don't know that there's any... there's no... Are there any capsule-shaped ships?
I mean... TIE Fighter doesn't seem like it would be, or like maybe a TIE Advance with the rounded wings doesn't seem like it'd be that bad.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think Y-Wing would be okay, even though it seems kind of bulky. If you did the pilot part first and then the back part.
It's literally a wishbone. You're talking about eating a wishbone. There's no way that's going to be a pleasant experience.
I don't think there's any precedent of things going wrong when that happens.
The Starfighter would not be bad. Like the little arrow shaped.
Oh, the Naboo?
Like, no. The one, it's the one from Jedi Starfighter.
Isn't that the Naboo Starfighter?
I'm not a nerd, so I don't know what the ships are called.
The like yellow one, right?
A nerd. Mm. I'm like kind of a jock, more of a jock, so I don't actually know. But
I think Slave One might be the most sort of.
Oh yeah, that seems pretty doable.
The most sort of pill-shaped vessel.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd eat the Death Star.
Oh, that's it. Right. If you could shrink Death Star down really, really tiny, it's basically a big Skittle that blew up Alderaan and killed everybody on it.
just want to remind everyone. Next week, we're going to be talking about... we're opening the... don't lock the gates. It's Baldur's Gate 3. And we're going to be... getting playing on that one. Hey, so what kind of game is Baldur's Gate?
It's a CRPG. It's like an isometric.
A Kerpig.
What?
A Kerpig?
It's a Kerpig.
It's the same RPG. It's the same developer. It's Larian who made Divinity 2, which is the best, like one of the best RPGs ever made. And it's like in that system, but using D&D like rules and stuff. It's hot.
Cool. Yeah.
I wanted to mention, you should, if you haven't yet, I feel like we're so many episodes in this season since we created the Twitter account, so it's hard to imagine people still listening to the show not following the Twitter account, but you should. It's The Besties Pod on Twitter. Head on over there. Chris Plant drops all the questions for the week, so if you want to get your question in, you could do it there. Any other business?
Yeah. Well, if you have thoughts on Baldur's Gate 3 or questions about what we thought, email us your salient points. And you can email us at... and I'm opening my mouth and then Russ's voice is going to come out of it.
It's mail@besties.fan.
Mail@besties.fan.
I think that's it.
That's going to do it for us for this week. So be sure to join us again next week for The Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
The Besties is a Spotify original podcast. In association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter and produced by Ben Hosley. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!